Omaha Public Radio presents another program for Metropolitan Community College on Noon Forum. We'll hear a talk by Gail Baker, professor and dean of the College of Communication, Fine Arts and Media at the University of Nebraska at Omaha. Dr. Baker will talk about the role of African Americans in journalism, diversity, and media in the 21st century. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Wednesday afternoon, February 11, 2009, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of Metropolitan Community College, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is Amy Force, an instructor in history at Metropolitan Community College.
I'm very honored to be introducing our guest today, Dr. Gail Baker. Let me tell you a little bit about her. There's so many things I could be here all day, but we'll cut some of them. She is from UNO, or prior to joining UNO, she has held numerous leadership positions at the University of Florida, including Vice President of Public Relations, Director of Communications, and Chair of the Public Relations Department in the College of Journalism and Communications. Dr. Baker holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Journalism from the Medill, I knew I stepped on it, School of Journalism at Northwestern University, a Master of Science degree in Marketing, Communications from Roosevelt University, and a Doctorate in Journalism from the University of Missouri-Columbia. Her industry experience includes positions at IBM and International Harvester, now known as Navistar. She was a reporter and editor for the Chicago Daily Defender newspaper. In fact, in 2006, Dr. Baker won an Emmy Award for Excellence in Documentary Writing for Paper Trail, 100 Years of the Chicago Defender. I'm impressed. So if you would please join me in welcoming Dr. Gail Baker.
Thank you. Well, thank you first for inviting me. Thank you for that wonderful introduction, and thank you for your patience. I have run from meeting to meeting today, and I thought I'd just come to campus and have a parking space right away, and it didn't happen. Okay, but I'm glad to be here. And what I'd like to do is talk to you a little bit about the topic, and then I want to answer questions if you have any. I think that the topic was entitled African Americans and Media in the 21st Century, or something like that. Okay, so what I wanted to say about that is so much to say. I mean, this is actually a topic that can be a course in and of itself. So in this 1 hour or 45 minutes that I have, I'm not going to be able to really give the topic justice. But what I'd like to do is kind of introduce you, not just to the topic, but why is it important? I mean, you know, who cares? And so I want to try to get past the who cares part, and then let's kick it around, and please feel free to ask me any question that you would like to ask me about this or anything related. Media images, you know, it's important to understand the value of media images. And I think people, when they see them, they go, well, I saw it. I don't know if you know how much you absorb it. Being able to tell a story or being able to shape your own destiny has a lot to do with the way people perceive you. And people get their images from the media. They watch television, they go on the internet, they watch YouTube, they see posters, they see billboards. And I look around in this classroom, which I don't see a lot of what I'd call racial diversity. And there are a lot of pockets and places in this country where people just don't come in contact with other people. That's just how it is. And so they have to develop their understanding of other people based on what they see. So media images become very, very important. When you go out to buy something, or when you go out, let's say to buy a car, you haven't seen every car. You haven't driven every car. I'm in a rental car today. My husband's car is in the shop. And so I'm in a rental car today, and I kind of like this car. Okay. Now, yesterday, who knows? But now I've been exposed to it, and I like it. My daughter says to me this morning, can we keep it? I don't think we can, okay? But, so next time I go out to buy a car, maybe this car, because I've been exposed to it. When you make a decision about people going to college, for example, and people who are going, you know, who can take their pick and they can go anywhere in the country. You know, number one college. We saw this last week. People said, well, Harvard University is number one. Well, they haven't been to Harvard. They may have parents who have been, but they haven't been. They get their impression of Harvard from all the information that they've been bombarded with. This must be a great school. It's a fabulous school. But why? You don't really know why. And then you make decisions about other people based on maybe what you see in the press about them, maybe the way that they have been portrayed. You know, we think about the Romans, we think about the Greeks, we think about these great warriors and the Vikings. We don't know any of them, but we've got really strong impressions of who they are. And even though those have come through media, modern media, that information has been passed down. And so it's important how you are portrayed in the media. I really wish it weren't as important. And people could just make decisions otherwise, but they don't. They make decisions based on what they see in the media. Now, when you look at the African American experience in this country, what people know about black people, and I'm gonna talk about black people today in from a stereotypical perspective, they've developed this over the years of hearing things, of seeing things. Oh, well, you know, well, black people are lazy, or black people are, they're great athletes. Now, stereotypes can have truth to them, but not every black person is a great athlete. Black people are great entertainers. All black people can dance. Not true, okay? Not true. But you watch television, and so you get these stereotypes by watching television. And you see, well, there's Oprah, okay? And Oprah may be, used to be, probably the most influential and well-recognized African-American person in the world. And I say used to be because she has been bumped by the President of the United States in terms of recognition and in terms of people saying, oh, okay, I know who he is. Do we? Okay? He has a very, very carefully, I would say, developed image. They don't work unless they're real in the long term. But he had to overcome, and every day still has to overcome, those images that people already have about African-American people. And so we get these impressions from the media. We also get them from the news. And when I was in the news business a long time ago, they would say, if it bleeds, it leads. So the thing that you put at the top of the news is that story everybody's going to go watch. Well, nobody wants to hear 20 students graduate from Elkhorn High School. It's a nice story. But only the parents of those 20 people really care. And so when you turn on the news, you hear, sounds like people got shot. People get shot all the time. People get robbed. If it bleeds, it leads. And many of those stories, when they tell you who the perpetrator might be, sometimes those are in the black community or in the Latino community. And so if you don't live in those areas, you say, oh, man, it's dangerous over there. Now, there's some truth to that. Don't get me wrong. I'm saying that, but because you saw it on the news, it takes a certain precedence. They call it agenda setting in media. The media kind of set the agenda. They tell you this is important because it's at the top of the newscast. This is less important because it's way down here. And so you see these images over and over again of people, and you make decisions about them based on those images. And the news media are particularly virulent with this because they only have, particularly television, they only have a little bit of time. So they are trying to capture the stereotype. They don't have time to tell you, well, this person really didn't or this person really did. They go, here's an image. So you say, oh, crime, black people, okay? Oh, lazy, oh, black people. Oh, wealth, people on welfare, oh, black people. Teenage pregnancy, oh, black people. You know, and I don't bring this to you from any particular, although I have a perspective. I'm not trying to move you into my perspective. I'm trying to show you how the images are shaped. So this is not a political conversation or a social conversation. It's really based in fact. We have a lot of images that show us things and reinforce some of those stereotypes that we have. So the media Here we are. When I was growing up in Chicago, a long time ago, I had a birthday on Sunday, so it's really been a long time ago when I grew up in Chicago, there were black people weren't on TV. So anytime you saw one, you get excited. Oh, God, it's a black person. No matter what they were doing, okay. you want to stop. Well, you would think that some decades later, it would be different. And in fact, there are more people of color on television, but there's a question about whether that is a positive or a negative situation in the long run. So I want to set this up by saying, believe it or not, you are influenced by the media. You are influenced by what you see. You are influenced by what you hear. You will make decisions, and sometimes you'll have to overcome those decisions because it's coming at you from all different directions. All through history, and this is not, black people are not the only people who have had this happen to them. You think about the Native Americans in this country. When I was a child growing up watching movies, I thought they were always the bad guys. They were always the ones in the wrong. Same thing has happened to Chinese Americans in this country, Hispanic Americans in this country, and in many cases, Caucasian and European Americans in this country. Somebody who has power and has control can make decisions about how you are portrayed, how you are viewed. Certainly women in this country have suffered the same fate. So media and who controls it and what it says and how responsible it is very, very, very important. The reason that I studied journalism when I did was because even as a young person, I could see in my mind, somehow, I didn't think the story was being told accurately. I was going to change the world single-handedly, okay? I was going to get a camera, and I was going to take my ink pen, and I was going to go places where other people didn't go, and I was going to let them know what the real truth was. Well, that was a good theory, and I'm glad I did it, and I studied it, and I did it, and I worked in a newspaper in Chicago, and I fought the good fight. But the reality is, it's very, very hard to overcome television, radio, movies. And we saw some even more recent movies where, in this case, African Americans themselves have decided it's okay. It's a free country, so in that regard, it is okay. But the question of how what you do, how what you decide to do contributes to the overall understanding of a people is very, very important and important to me. So I studied that, and then I went from journalism into advertising because I thought, well, journalism is having an impact, but look what advertising is doing. Every time you see a person of color in advertising, they're really, really happy, and they're glad to have this product, but when I see people, they're not necessarily having the same experience. There's something off about this. I wrote one of the first books in 1993, maybe, about how people of color were portrayed in advertising, a textbook, because I kept going, there's some dissonance here. There's a difference between what is real and what I see. Now, advertising does not really claim to be the truth. It claims to take this snapshot and try to persuade you to do something. But while it is persuading you that you want to drink Coca-Cola, it's also showing you the people who do and how they live. And you can either decide that you want to live that way or that person is such a buffoon that you want to use the other product. And I often saw people of color on the wrong end of those kinds of messages. And so we had it in advertising. In athletics, and you all, this is way before your time. My children complain now that I've become, I guess, my mother. In the old days, okay, and I have children older than you, and I have children younger than you, so I'm getting it from all sides. In the old days, when we used to watch football, it was all in black and white, and there were no black quarterbacks in the NFL, my father would say, well, there may never be any. Why not? They're good athletes. Why not? Because that's the most important position on the field. And so when I would watch football as a young person, this was not an expectation that I had. Because all of the people who made those kind of decisions about the person who touched the ball every time, you know, was Old Gumshoe Mage, was Bart Starr and Johnny Unitas and people you are, Joe Namath, okay, maybe people have heard of him, people like that. So to think that somebody of color could get in a position to actually hold the football and then pass it and make a decision about who it went to, this was a dream that I could never see coming. Well, you know, you live long enough and things change. And the same thing in corporations, because you never saw an African-American person leading a corporation, or you didn't see an African-American person being a dean of at a university. I don't have a role model for this job that I'm in. In fact, even going to a university, you know, I'm a first-generation person, so nobody in front of me went. My sisters, but they don't count. I mean, I'm kidding. They were very good examples for me, but I'm talking about in the generation in front of me. And so all these years, if you keep looking at images like that and you see yourself as a gangster or you see yourself as a drug dealer, even if you're not one, those are the images that you are seeing, and you see yourself as a criminal, and the media tell you, you know, there are more black men in prison than there are in college. If I hear that stat one more time, it's ridiculous, because I think they're cooking the books. Not to say that that is not possible, but I want to see actual numbers that show me that. And then rather than just throw it out there, does it not tell us that it's time for us to examine either what's wrong with college or what's wrong with prison or what's wrong with the social environment that creates that kind of disparity? But that's too much to ask when you're talking about a newscast. But you hear that, so you're a 12-year-old boy, African-American boy, and you hear that, and you think you got a better chance of going to prison than you got of going to college. And then you go to the movies, and you see people, and they sing, and they dance. What am I supposed to do? So if I were doing this lecture in a year ago, I would tell you that we have not yet broken the major barriers. Now, that doesn't mean things are going to change, but broken the major barriers. But you will see after the Obama election, there are going to be lectures, there are going to be people writing dissertations about what it means in terms of image and the media and the portrayal. I saw a couple of days ago over in France, they're doing a fashion show, and it's like they get men who look like Obama. That's kind of crazy. But what they're, you know, it's, there is a change here. It might be subtle, but that's something that somebody thinks is appealing. And so by himself, because of the visibility that he gets, doesn't matter if you agree or disagree with him, the President of the United States has enormous visibility. By himself, that visibility helps people start thinking, okay. Not necessarily, okay, I like him, or okay, I'm going to vote for him, but okay, he hasn't pulled a switchblade on anybody yet. Or he hasn't started rapping in the Oval Office, we don't know that, on tape yet, okay? Or he hasn't gotten anybody straightened out the way you might anticipate, because you have a stereotype about the way an African-American man acts. So you might see him and, you know, people going, you know, remember there was so much anxiety, and you may have had some of that anxiety. What's it going to be like? Like, if he were to become president, all of a sudden everything was going to change one way or the other. Well, it didn't. One way or the other. You know, the White House didn't change. There are different people living in it. The government didn't crumble. There's not a hole in the universe. And so over time, people will not necessarily, again, agree with him, but they'll say, well, gee, nothing really bad like I thought happened. So I can see an African-American person doing those kinds of things. And you go back to the Oprah example, and Oprah is an excellent example because, and I don't watch her show, it's just I'm not home and she's not usually talking about something that I care about, but a lot of people do. And she has great influence, and somehow when people see her, they see her as an African-American woman, but they see her as a person who knows what she's talking about, a person that has credibility. If Oprah says the book is good, it flies off the shelf. If Oprah says, you know, I started wearing these shoes You can't find them. I know. I've tried. Okay. Because I hear about what she says. And the reason I listen to her when I do is because I figure if she could have any shoe in the world she wants, and she wants a shoe I can't afford, it must be comfortable, I should get it too. So even I am influenced by a person like that. And so people don't say, well, she's black, I'm not going to listen to her. So over time, we've seen these images change. But at the same time, there's a fight to hold on. And there are people who are still doing very, very negative things with these images. So the 21st century is going to be very, very interesting. And I wish I had time to do this kind of research in terms of what happens now. Is this a turning point? Are things going to change? Are we going to see better images? Are we going to see worse images? You think about rap. When rap came out, I was young. That's how long rap has been out. When rap music first came out, I was still living in Chicago, and I thought, this will never last, okay? The other day, I'm watching TV, and I see what's the True Untold Story, TH, Behind the Music, I don't know, one of those specials, and they're talking wives of rap stars. And I'm thinking, man, now these people gotten old enough in rap to have wives and children and become moguls. And I just never thought it would last. But what an impression it has had on the society. We hear it. We see it. I didn't see that coming. And it was a turning point. You know, rap scared a lot of people, and there was a thought that maybe there was a lot of anger. I think that may have been true, and it was being expressed in rap music. And then there's a whole hip-hop culture that goes along with that. People start dressing like rap artists. That's something that's very subtle, but it goes on, and it perpetuates throughout the culture. So the question of the 21st century is, what are these images going to be? Who's going to control them? And 20 years from now, what are we going to think when we see a person of color step up to a podium or step up to a microphone? Or, in fact, because there is crime and there are issues, get involved in something that is negative. And so it's just a different day, and it's too early to tell what it's going to mean. But it is, in fact, a great, great time to be looking at these images. The major point, I want to give you time, and please, I know, I always ask questions that nobody asks, so start thinking about your questions. What I really wanted you to think about today is the power of the media, the extreme power of the media. There are five companies in this country that own just about all the radio in this country. And so they are telling you whatever it is they want to tell you. And you turn to the next, you don't turn anymore, do you? You push a button and you go to the next, and it might be the same perspective. And you go here. So you got this control. Media monopoly was not supposed to happen, but it did for many reasons. And so you've got somebody, if this is my company, I own one of the five companies. Maybe I want everybody to feel like they should go to school. Maybe I think that college is the way that everybody should go. So all my shows are about people who go to college. And so you get people who say, well, I don't have the resources to go to college, or I don't want to go to college, or I want to go to the military. Well, you won't get anything from my radio stations, because my perspective is everybody ought to go to college. And nobody is challenging me because they can't, because I own all of the radios. Same thing with newspapers, which unfortunately are dying before our very eyes because they didn't change with the times. And so newspapers, you had one newspaper in the morning and one in the afternoon and maybe two in the afternoon, and this paper would come out with this headline, and then that one would take a different position, and you had them battling. Now, there are very few newspaper chains, and so you're not getting those differences in opinion. Now, you say, well, it's okay. I guess I would feel good if it were my opinion, but I couldn't feel good about it, because what if it's not my opinion? It's not fair. And so if I own every newspaper on the East Coast, my perspective is, okay, that everybody ought to be interested in going green, let's just say. So everything that I print is on recycled paper. And everything I talk about and my main articles are about a green economy. Well, what if you don't want to do that or you don't believe in that? And so media have that power. So you walk in by the newspaper and you see every headline that says something about things going green. You say, well, that must be important because they keep talking about it. And you turn on your television and you see everybody talking about the same thing. Well, that must be important. So media images are very, very important and very, very critical in shaping how people make decisions. Anyway, like I said, this could be a whole class, and so I'm going to stop and take a breath and let you ask any question. We have a microphone that you would like to ask about media or images or, oh, good, see, I was stalling, hoping for a question.
How do you feel about the use of the N-word in media today and how it is portrayed as
okay
for a certain group and not for others?
That's a very good question. I'm going to show my age, okay? The word, the N-word, and you saw it there, has such negative connotations for me. I don't see any reason to ever use it. That's my personal opinion. Why would you ever? It's a racial slur. It was used on me as a child. It hurts every time I hear it, even when I hear it in a tape where I wrote it in. And younger people today say, yeah, but I'm going to take the power of the word away by using it. And they can. That's their perspective. I see no place for it in civilized society. But it is a free country. My children, this is how you get in trouble. Do my children use it? No. Yeah, right. Then somebody have a tape. Okay. Yeah. And she said her children didn't use it, but there's one right now. Okay. So I hope that I have trained and taught my children to have a better and bigger and broader and more descriptive vocabulary than using a word that puts somebody down. Now, if I heard them use it, yeah, I'd be mad. And I would try to explain that it's hurtful, and it was hurtful to me. So I don't like it. But again, it's a free country. Excellent question. I didn't see that one coming. More question? Come on.
How do you feel about the way media possibly tries to make the black cultures more like white culture as opposed to having their own pluralistic sort of?
Oh, that's another good question. She says, how do I feel about media trying to assimilate black people into white culture? The truth is, black people have assimilated into the mainstream culture and have contributed to the mainstream culture at the same time. So it is possible to be a part of something and still be distinct. But when you try to, I'm going to use a broad term here, whitewash a culture, it doesn't work. And advertising, when we first started to integrate in advertising, what they would do is they would take the same ad and they would just take the white people out of the ad and they put the black people in. Well, the reason it was ineffective is because many black people, African-American people, could not relate to that particular scenario. And so they could see the black face, but they go, well, that ain't going to happen to me, or I don't use that product. And so it was bad business. And so I think from a perspective of an educational environment and a business environment, I want to understand and respect your culture. I don't want you to become just what they say. I don't want everybody to be blended together into something that is not unique, because it is your uniqueness that I can appeal to when I'm talking to you about something. It is the difference that other people have that helps to educate you about the entire world. So I said when I used to write about this stuff, you don't want to do that. There are commonalities. Family would be a commonality that you could use in an advertising theme. But the way my family lives might be different from the way somebody else's family lives, and I might insult that person if I'm saying, you have to live just like this. You have to live in a house in the suburbs with a white picket fence, and you got 2.1 children and two cars, and everybody's nice to each other, and you come down to breakfast at 7:30. Most of you all don't live like this either, okay? But, you know, you go, well, I don't live like that, so I'm not listening to your message. So I think if you really want to listen, you want to appeal to people, you have to meet them where they are and not try to fit them into a mold that does not exist. On the other hand, I cannot stand it when people say to me or to my children, and I'm going to be honest with you, and I know I'm being taped, oh, well, you know, she's acting white. What does that mean? Okay? And I have four children, and every one of them at some point has come to me or their father to try to help us explain, why do they say that about me? Okay? Because they say, oh, you're trying to sound like you white. And I have to explain that if it's coming out of their mouth, it can't sound like they're white. It sounds like them. And that there are people across the spectrum. And so when I do something, it is me doing it. It's not a black activity. It's not a white activity. It's something that I have chosen to do. And so while I don't consider myself all blended in, there are things in the culture that attract me. And so those things, for me, are not white things. I don't think, oh, well, I'm listening to white music. I think I'm listening to the music I like. But when I was growing up, I listened to, like, this station in Chicago, and it was a rock station, and people, you listen to white music. And so we have to get away, I think, from grouping people and stereotyping people and assuming, that's what we're talking about with the images, assuming that if I see you and you're dressed a certain way, oh, you must be in a gang, okay? You got a hoodie on, you must be in a gang. Maybe your head is cold, okay? And in Chicago, somebody had to teach me that, by the way, in Chicago. Don't come out in your hoodie, because I like hoodies. Okay, so I learned, and I didn't do it. Not that anybody would mistake me for being in a gang. It's an age issue, nothing else. Who is she? Okay, the grandmother of the group. But you want to be careful to not do that to people and take people individually and talk to them individually. So when you think about the images, when you think about who you're talking to, don't fall back on the stereotypes. It's easy, but it's not as effective. We got time for one more question? We have a question over here.
I just wondered if you think the internet will loosen the grip of the media on what we consume.
Yes, and that's a good thing. The internet allows you to say, I don't think I'll read that in the New York Times. I'm going to go over here and read it. Now, the downside is everything reliable on the internet? You know, can you go to Wikipedia and write your papers? I hope you're not doing that, because it's not necessarily reliable. But it does allow kind of, you can circumvent the mainstream. And that's really one of the problems that mainstream media are having right now. People say, I'm a newspaper person. I used to work in a newspaper. I wanted to work in a newspaper. I don't read a daily newspaper in my hand today. I get up in the morning, I'm hitting the blogs, and my husband did it first. And I was like, what is he always on a computer looking at? And now I have to get up in the morning and see what the blogs are saying. So that's a turnaround to me. But I know what the New York Times is saying. I pay attention. And then I go and read what I want to read, okay, or what I think loosens that grip a little bit. People who are not trained or not corporate in so much as the New York Times has sponsors, and they don't want to offend their sponsors, and so they can write certain stories, or they're owned by somebody who has a particular perspective, or the managing editor has. I don't want that, okay? Now, don't think I'm so naive that I think the people on the blogs do not have a perspective, but I know that, and I pretty much think I know what their perspective is, so I can look at it through that prism. They're not pretending to be objective. They're just putting out information and letting me decide how I feel about it. Whereas in journalism, there is always the goal, unreachable, of objectivity. It's impossible to be completely objective when you go out to tell a story. Anybody else?
I got a couple questions for you, Dr. Baker. What kind of hurdles have you had in your career, And what else drove you besides wanting to change the world to get to where you are today? Do you have family or anyone else that drove you to get to where you are?
Thank you. See, that's easy. I can talk about myself. Hurdles, that's a good question. And, of course, again, you ask my children, they'd be like, what hurdles? You know, the truth is I did grow up on the south side of Chicago in a very segregated neighborhood where there was a train track, and on one side of the train track were white people, and on this side were black people. And so I was very familiar with what that's like to live in a place where people don't mix, and if you go on the other side of the track, they call you the N-word. The biggest hurdle, some of my hurdles have been for being black. Some have been for being a woman. Some have been for being unconventional. And so, yeah, people, I have to overcome stereotypes sometimes every day. I mean, even as a dean of a college, which is a great job, I always have to be conscious of how what I think people think, you know. So I don't have the freedom to just go into a room and just say what I'm going to say. I have to worry about how I am perceived. It's an extra burden, but it's who I am, and I work with it. So, sometimes I think I didn't get the job because people weren't ready. I mean, I actually had an opportunity where that was told to me that the people that wanted to hire me, but the people who controlled them were not ready, and I was the best person. And you take that and you say that's their loss. I mean, you really have to say, if I was ready to do this job and I was progressive enough to bring you whatever skills you think I had, but somebody just doesn't want to face the fact that this person is African-American, that's their loss. And so but you have to work with that, because some days you go, well, why does it have to be like this? And then the next day you get up and you say, because that's the way it is, and I'm going on to the next challenge. So I don't ever stop. I am driven. I'm a type A personality, and I like change, and I like excitement, and I like energy, and I've had a family that's been extremely supportive, from my parents to my children, who I have a child turning 30 on Saturday. He's in Florida. And so they've been supportive, and a husband who's been very supportive. And so it does help. But what really helps, I think, is to kind of know who you are. And so you don't get to define me. Even though you might have these perceptions about me, if I'm your teacher for 16 weeks or the dean or wherever you see me, you can have those perceptions, but you don't get to define me. So at the end of the day, I know who I am, and I'm pretty pleased. I'm not, you know, I'm always working on me, but I don't let other people determine. And that's what I try to teach my children. No matter that's who you are. Don't let other people, as they say, pull you off your game. If you playing this kind of game, you playing offense, don't let them fake you out and pull you off your game. They do that in basketball all the time. Somebody's got a game that they want to play. They want to play full court press or whatever, and then the other team comes and throws them off and scores. And so know what your game is and stay on your game, and it's a lot of fun. I have a lot of fun. I get to do things like this, which I don't get to teach a lot because I'm an administrator. I get to go places. I get to visit. I get to work on projects like this one. I get to work on the Emmy-winning project, which was really very, very exciting. And it's like four people in the Obama administration, including him, are on that Defender video, the one that won the Emmy. We're like, well, we didn't know, okay? But these were people in Chicago who had some pull and some clout, and all of them are on the tape. And that was fun. And, so I get to shape things. I get to help students who come in and sometimes say, well, you know, I got off to a bad start, and I get to overturn some decisions, and it's fun. But I thank you for asking. I've been running today. I've been running today. Last question, last comment.
How do you feel about the way, like, is it a more of a positive or negative thing with African Americans on television today? Do you see it as a positive thing that they're getting more time on television, like Flavor Flav and his reality shows and the and the BET network? Or do you see it as a negative thing as to what they're saying?
Flavor Flav, never seen that. I think it's a good thing that there's more exposure. I certainly wish people of a certain age group like him would just be a little more conscious of the image that they portray. And so I'm of two hearts. I mean, I think, yeah, it's good. We've got the exposure. But now that we have it, can we do some other things? And there's not enough exposure for us to have room for the kind, this is my opinion, you asked me, the Flavor of Love, which of course I've never seen, kind of show. I think that hurts. I think anything that makes women look bad hurts, and I think anything that makes African-Americans look bad, or anybody, don't get me wrong, if there were a show that was stereotypical about some people in Appalachia and how they performed and act, I wouldn't like that either. Okay, so I'm not a person on one mission, except that everybody should have a chance to be as positive as possible. So I wouldn't like that either, and I wouldn't watch it. I mean, I know it exists, but I wouldn't watch it, and I wouldn't support it. So no, I'm glad we got the exposure, but I'm hoping that we turn to a place where people say, now that I've got this venue, let me do something to make a difference, and that's a good place for us to stop. I appreciate the questions. I really appreciate your time. I'm telling you, this is a whole course. I jumped all around, but I hope it gave you some flavor of how media operate and their importance and the value and how you can operate and what you need to know about it when you look at it. So thank you again for your time. Thank you.
You've been listening to a program from the Metropolitan Community College Lecture Series on Noon Forum. We've heard a talk by Gail Baker, professor and dean at the College of Communication, Fine Arts, and Media at the University of Nebraska at Omaha. She talked about the role of African Americans in journalism, diversity, and media in the 21st century. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Wednesday afternoon, February 11th, 2009, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Shayla O'Connor, Director of Marketing and Public Relations at Metropolitan Community College, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.